Okay, we're going to start Hilchas Shechita. How much time do I have about?
2:30.
Till 2:30. Okay. So first, beginning of Hilchas Shechita deals with who are those who are kosher to shecht. Hakol shochtim lechatchil afilu noshim. And the Ramah says, V'yesh omim she'en la niach noshim lishchot shekvar nagu shelo lishchot v'chein haminig she'en hanoshim shoichtos. So, I just want to tell you an idea that the Rav had about what's the minute that women don't shecht. Presumably the reason is that by women there's a chashash shema yisalef, you know, technical reasons. That's the basis of the minig. But he thought that there might be that the basis of the minig is a different one. And the reason I quote his reason is because it's significant in just in terms of the perspective of Shechita generally. you know, the Ram of Shechita is that women, that the halacha melech v'lo malka, which excludes women from any position of svara, excludes them not only from malchus, but any position, communal position of authority. And though there are chalkim on the Rambam, Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Tshuvas writes that there was a Shaila, which I'm going to reference in a second again, but there was a Rav Moshe has a Tshuva Digus Moshe, I think it's in the first Chelek in Yerodea, about a woman who was he doesn't mention her name, it was Rebbetzin Zemba. She was a Rebbetzin in Chicago, and her husband passed away, and she took over his hashgachas, and that was her sole source of income. And the question was, should she be excluded because of this halacha melech v'lo malka? So we would have thought the response would be, that's not called svara. You know, being a mashgiach or giving hashgacha, that's not a position of svara. But Rav Moshe says, no, it is, because you can say what ingredients are used and so on. And Rav Moshe's mekil for different reasons, namely that he says that not everybody agrees to the Pesach HaRambam, that the Loch HaMelech Malka is so expansive and goes beyond Malchus. I think Rav Moshe quotes the Chinuch. Rav Moshe doesn't quote this, but it seems from Tosis not that way, because Tosis in Bava Kama has different opinions about whether a woman can be a member of a Beis Din. Some say, how was the Devorah, you know, was a shofeta, some say, what Tosh says it was, there was always an arbitration, they were masking to it. So Pierre Dibur is different, but one tense in Tosis is that a woman is not excluded from Beis Din. But according to that data, what she should be excluded for a different reason. Forget the psul kol shepol kol apostle lahoyed apostle ladon. The Mishnah in Nida, she's apostle because of the din svara. So you see that Tosis was apparently not bothered by that, which seems to indicate that maybe Tosis thinks that doesn't apply. So that would be support for the position which Rav Moshe quotes from the Chinuch, and he says we can rely on that position. It's interesting, there's another tshuva that Rav Moshe has, which is written to Rabbi Shapansky. Rabbi Shapansky, I think, based on this tshuva, says, according to you, Rav Moshe, why can't you have a woman president of a shul? And you can see in the tshuva that Rav Moshe responds, he's annoyed with the question. Sort of gives him the back of the hand. But the reason I cite it is because, for two reasons. Also, it shows a certain perspective that Rav Moshe had about Hashgacha, and that is that it's, especially being a shoichet or being, it's communal responsibility. And therefore, if we would hold like the Rambam, then indeed they would be excluded. So the Rav thought that might be the reason that women can't shecht, because it's not a chson to say of nemonos or because of, you know, as I said, Shemi Salat, maybe she'll faint the sight of blood. It's because it's a position of authority and responsibility. And you know, historically, in the cities in Europe, in the Shtetlach, the primary position was that of the Rav, and the second position in terms of people of, you know, people of a person of authority or some of a person who was respected in the community was the Shoichet. Shoichet has to be, as we learn in Shulchan Aruch, has to be Yerushalayim Barabim, has to study Hilchos Shechita and so on. And so the Rav said that's why women l'chatchila are excluded, because Melech v'lo Malka. And he said for Horaya, the Beis Yosef quotes, I think from the Kolbo, that it's a Rishonim already, that in a, even that a woman can't shecht, that the minute that women don't shecht is only to shecht for Acherim, but La'atzman they can. Now if the halacha was a chashash because of Nemanus or because of you know, technically, you know, they might not perform it properly, so then there's no chilek between the shecht and La'acherim or La'atzman. But if it's based on what the Rav said, that it's because of meaningless rubber, so then we can understand the chiluk. Alright. Again, I emphasize, I mention it because it's significant just in terms of the perspective of kashrus. Because one of the things that was, that afflicted shechit in America was this dichotomy that, you know, there were many slaughterhouses with you know, one shochet, I said, look, I'm doing my job, that the boidik ends up at the end with, you know, 95% kosher rate, I'm doing my job. But, you know, if you view the position as a communal position with responsibility to the general community, that emphasizes, you know, the responsibility you have to make sure that the entire operation is kosher. Yeah.
The Shulchan mentioned, just like the Ramah, that we're not knowing for women to shecht. If according, you presumably told like the Rambam that women can't just as far in general, so why isn't Shulchan Aruch mentioned that at all according to the Rav?
I mean, why is it just a meaning? Because you mean, is that what you mean?
He says a kol shulchan with a chila, he doesn't even mention any issue of, he hasn't even given a notion that.
Yeah, I'll tell you why. Because I think that this notion of shechita that developed historically. Because later on, the Ramo says, you know, that in order to get to be a shochet, you have to get kabbalah. But you know, the shechita emerged as a communal position only later, when there were requirements that were established, which is after the period of the Gemara. So at that point, when they require that a shochet has to have kabbalah and a certain criterion, and he has to, as I mentioned, the Ramo, so it elevated the position not simply as a functionary, you know, just shechting, but also as a communal responsibility. You see it later on in Shulchan Aruch also. It says that if the call made a cherem that only this and this person can shech, no one else is allowed to shech. The shachis has an opinion that if somebody else shechts, maybe the shechita will be possible. So that indicates that there was apparently a communal position, and the community can say only this and this person will shech. But if it's, you know, just a technical thing, like you couldn't, let's say to salt the meat in their house, you know, that wasn't a communal position. So shechit was transformed historically into that kind of position. So maybe it dovetailed with that, and that's why the minhag developed.
According to what I'm understanding here, is that if a woman decided that she wanted to do shechita for her own household, there would be no problem with that, even according to the...
No. I told you it's the Beis Yosef quotes the Kolbos as indeed saying that, right? But the Benin Latz, when they can, we don't hold that way. We have the meaning is because we took away shechita, we, the community, historically, just from the individual, and we made it a communal responsibility. I mean, if you look in the Ramah, I mean, it emerges very quick. I mean, very clearly. So, ein lismach al. He says, "The ein hachochm nosin lo kabbalah." Here. V'chozim may v'achem she'en b'kim v'yodim. Aber hashoichet atzmen lo yishol afa bishodei hilchas shechita umumcha at sheyishochet gimel pam v'fnei chacham umumcha behilchas shechita v'yodeya shodei shu rogel v'zorish shelo yis aleph lachein nogim she'ein adam shochet elam kein notul kabbala ve'ein hachacham nosen kabbala at sheyeda bo shu yodei hilchas shechita boki b'yad means you know, technically, he knows how to hold a chalif and knows, you know, has the technical skill to do the slaughter. V'lachein nogin hakol haboin lishkot somchin alein l'chadchila v'lo batkinin also d'achom itzun eshe shchita v'anotl kabol v'nei achochem, and so on. And so, and then the minig is that we give a ksav kabbalah. So that's also said v'chein nogo. So that v'chein nogo dovetails with the minog that noshim don't share.
No,
so it, no one could. No, so you can't shech unless you have Kabbalah.
So that way, like, from two stuff, women wouldn't be able to shech.
What's the second side?
One side is Zara, this Zara, and then the other is just the.
No, but why don't they get Kabbalah? There's one reason, right? So give a woman Kabbalah to shech. So we're saying we don't give them Kabbalah because that's already meaningless. Because once the shoychit was elevated, and it's not just an individual, you know, just a technical skill, but it's a mini hakol, so then that women are memele excluded.
Rabbi, if a child learns halacha of shchita and shechts under the supervision of a shochet, then the meat is mutter deraisa.
If a woman shechts, it's also kosher.
So that's why
we're talking about lechatchila. L'chadchila, they shouldn't share.
Even to get a Kabbalah, you have to learn how to share. So
yes.
And the meat of l'chadchila is fine to eat. So why wouldn't it be? So you just don't give a woman Kabbalah. Let her constantly do it underneath the guidance of another shofet.
But we don't set up a system. L'chadchila, we don't let anybody share on that kind of thing. But you're saying about a cotton. We don't what?
How do they learn how to share? They have to learn how to share. And there's somebody going to teach them how to share. And those animals they share while learning are kosher.
Yeah. Again, this doesn't make it possible. Just showing to be on a permanent basis, you can't become a shoychid unless, right? You're asking me about on a temporary, on an occasion. That's not a meaningless swara, right? But to be the shoychid on a regular basis, that's a meaningless swara.
But for her family, then she would be out of the shech.
No, she would not. Once they elevated it, that, so we said that to be a shoychid, right? In other words, to be qualified, to be a shoychid, it's a mini hakol. So therefore, she wouldn't have it. Now again, I emphasize, it doesn't mean if she did it, it's possible. It's not possible, it's kosher. But that's why there's a minig that women don't shech.
But then Mefarshim and Shulchan Aruch give the reasons why there's a minig that women don't shech. What pushed the Rav to give that extra svara?
Well, we don't really know what the reason is. In other words, we know, for example, the going quotes, we know that women did shecht a kosher, so it would seem that they shechted, a kol kshevim, everybody's kosher, even noshim, to shecht in the base of mikvah. So, I mean, I think what the reasons, the other reasons cited wouldn't dovetail, for example, with this kolbo and so on, and the mordechai that I said.
And stuff like that.
Right, then it should be even la'atzman, they shouldn't shecht. Yeah. I've got a lot more to talk about. This was just a hayola.
If they shoot Sarara, does that extend that to Gerim as well?
Yeah, so I rather asked the Rav about that. So why shouldn't it apply to a Ger? So the answer is, Ger is actually not excluded per se from Aminui. The halach of Ger is he can't have Sarara on another Yisrael. For Havaya Ger can be done Chaveru HaGer, right? Or according to Tosis, Ger is only excluded, let's say, for Nefashis, is kosher for Mominus. So Ger is not per se excluded. It's only that he can't have Svara on Yisrael, but here it doesn't involve Svara on Yisrael. It's just on the Behema, obviously. Who hopefully ends up dead. Okay. Now, in terms of Shchita, how do we understand Shchita? First of all, there are five Hilchos Shchita. Those are the basic halachos of Shchita. We'll try to talk about some of them. Who knows the five Hilchos Shchita? You get some, yeah. You said all five?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay. So, I trust you. So, okay. So, we'll talk in a little while about what those five Hilchos Shchita are. But but in the Minyan Mitzvos, the Rambam counts Shchita as a mitzvah. And the Ravid is Masig. The Ravid holds that it's not a mitzvah. It's a shlila. Now, if you don't shecht al pidin, so then the animal will be an avela, but it's not counted in tayug mitzvahs. What does that machloikis depend on? So this is what I wanted to suggest. I once had this conversation with Reb Shmuel Berman, Zochama Bracha, who was Rosh Shiva Namir. We can understand shchit in one of two ways. One way is that the definition of nevela is that an animal that dies by itself or is killed not through in accordance with the Hilcha Shchita is called a nevela. The other way we can understand shchita is that shchita is a matir. There's an iser in a zavuach, an iser nevela, and maybe even minachai, and shchita comes and is matir that iser. In terms of whether shchita is a matir, there are different lines back and forth. I just want to cite one. It's clear that Kivega thought that shchita was a matir because Kivega asks, if you shecht on Shabbos, Kivega asks why isn't the shchita possible? If it's the second time, it will become for shechts b'shoigig, or if it does b'meizid, even the first time, it doesn't become a muma. But if you shecht on Shabbos, the shechit is kosher. Why don't you say kol milso di avid rachmana lo savid I avid lo mahani? Close by for rava. So, Kivek has a discussion about it. From what do you see from Kivek's kasha? You see that he thinks that shchita is a chalois. Otherwise, I'd not do go mislavach lo savid ilav imani. The aloch of that machlokes is if you do something not in accordance with the Torah, is that what you did? Is it effective? Is there a chalois? So you see from Kivega that there's a chalois. There are other riots about this. The Rishonim have this. The Yamshel Shlomo quotes the Pesach Chiv quotes. What if I shecht? And I have kavana that shchita shouldn't be matir. You know, does that take effect or not? Which also seem to indicate that there's a chalois. So that might be related to this machlokes between the Rambam and the Ravid, namely that when the Rambam counts shchita, it doesn't necessarily mean that shchita is a kima mitzvah. It may just mean that shchita, that there's a parasha in the Torah of shchita. For example, in minyan mitzvahs there's a mitzvah of get, right? It doesn't mean that when a man gives a get to his wife, that he's mekayim a mitzvah. It means if you want to be matter the isha ishashish, you have to give a get. But it's not a mitzvah kiyumis. But the Ram doesn't only count mitzvahs in the tariq mitzvahs, he counts in yoni hatorah, for example, somasochah, somachinam, right? So therefore, shchita is called an inyan hatorah, because there's a category of shchita. However, if you learn that shchita is not a matir, so shchita just is, it's just telling us that it's not nevela. It's simply it's a part of the definition of nevela. Offhand, that it wouldn't have been counted in the minyan mitzvahs, which is the position of the Ravid. Now, yeah.
According to this that it's a matir and it's a halos, I asked the question to Rav Simon near there, that according to the end of Yom Tov, it should never be bottled. Because the Yom Tov says that bittul could only work to neutralize an isser, it can't work to impose onto something a halos, like tzitzis that weren't tzavir l'shma.
Right.
And you can't say it's bottled the rest of them.
Right.
So shchita means that it's a chalois of heter.
It's mamish not the same. What the Oni Gyan others say it also, for example, Sefer Torah that's mixed up was written Shalal Lishma, other things, because bittul can only take away a din. Bittul can't make it a chalois Lishma. Even if it's bottled, it's not Lishma. I'm not saying, I don't mean that there's a chalois in the same way that I mean that it's Lishma, which is a positive definition in the tzitzis or in the Sefer Torah. I just mean that it's matter the Isur, right? That's what I mean in terms of it's being a chaloit. Its status has changed, but it's not. It's not the same over there. We're just now. What is if you shecht? Let's now go to the other. There's another way to interpret this Rambam, that shchita itself is a kim hamitzvah. When I shecht, I fulfill a mitzvah. And could be maybe that the heter shchita may be dependent to come according to some achronim even in the mitzvah. The Rav thought that this was impossible. I think it was because the way he used to cite is sort of maybe some of his experience he had with shoychim. You mean to tell me this shoychim shechted 1,000 oifas an hour? He's every time he's getting a mitzvah. that's sort of an emotional argument. I don't know, but what would seem to indicate that shechita is a mitzvah? What would if one would want to argue that shechita is a kibbutz mitzvah? What would you cite?
The
brach, of course. So that would seem to indicate that the shechita is a mitzvah. But that's not so clear, because it could be, the Rav said, that he had a whole category of brachos, of, you know, a category of birkas hamitzvah, where the bracha is made not on the kiyum, but the bracha is made on the chalois that's accomplished. For example, the bracha on Erev may be a bracha on the chalois heta. The bracha of Ersin, according to some, might not be a birkas hamitzvah. It may be I wouldn't say it's not a birkas hamitzvah. It falls into this category of a birkas hamitzvah that's on the chalois. The thing that would indicate that is, according to the Ram seems clearly that the bracha is a bracha on the mitzvah, and that's one of the proofs, because the Ram says really it should be done by the chassan, and it's a bracha on the mitzvah. You see first of all from the Rambam that the Rambam thinks that kedushin, getting married, is a mitzvah. Independent of that, I recommend it to all of you. But the Ravid is of the opinion that the bracha is made after the erusin. So if it was a mitzvah, you know, maybe it should be made before. There are other reasons, technical reasons, why maybe it should be made afterwards. Maybe the girl doesn't want it. Maybe after you make the bracha, she's going to change her mind. So it depends on her accepting it. But it could be that the bracha is a bracha on the chalois ishus, not a kiyum, because as we know, as Rishon already pointed out, it's a very strange bracha. You never make a bracha on an isha. Shekim Shom Tzivanu al Havayos for Osolanos Arusos. Where do we find a bracha on the negative? So maybe a bracha on the chalois. But the Rush is of the opinion that the Birkas Shechita is actually not an independent bracha that was first formulated as it relates to Shechita Schulin, but really was a bracha that was said on Shechita in the Beis Hamikdash, on Shechita's Kotchim. And Shechita's Kotchim certainly is a mitzvah, we would think, because it's part of one of the Dalet Avoidas. So it's part of the Kiyum HaKorban, HaKorvas HaKorban. Having said that, I just want to mention the Rav also said that in terms, and you know, is Shechita Kotchim and Shechita Schulin, are they identical? So the Ramban, this was Machlokes in Rashi and the Ramban. The Ramban learns, where do we derive Shechit in general? He says we derive, it's formulated in the Torah by Kotchim, and we borrow it from Kotchim to Chulin. Rashi says Kasher Tzvisicha is Halacha Mos Misinai. Kasher Tzvisicha is referring to Halacha Mos Misinai, so there are two different parshas of Shechitas Kotchim and Shechitas Chulin. We know there is one difference between Shechitas Kotchim, maybe between Shechitas Kotchim and Shechitas Chulin. Does anybody know what that is? No. I mean, Oifis, of course, there is no Shechita by Oifis. Kavana, right. That by Kotchim, without Kavana, the Shechita is possible. By Chulin, Shechita Misasik, you know, it doesn't require Kavana for Shechita. Whether that's a specific halacha in Shechita, or that's a halacha in all Dalet Kavan, Dalet Avodis, was a machlokes between the Chaim Oizer and the Chazon Ish. Chaim Oizer quotes it in the Achi Ezer. But I just wanted to show you just an idea that I had related to this. You know, one of the five hills for Shechita is Shehiyah, right? So how much Shehiyah means you can't pause in the middle of the Shechita. Now, how much is a pause? So what's the halacha? So it's kidei, it's not just kidei Shechita, it's kidei Shechita, kidei that you can, that you would, you know, wrestle the animal, kadesh, and tie it up for the shechita, get it down, and v'yishchot. So, and of course, a A behemah gasa takes longer than a behemah daka, and a daka takes longer than an oaf. In the Gemara, there's a machloikis, whether it's gasa, is it a relative standard or is it a universal standard? Is it gasa for everything? Or it's relative, gasa la gasa, daka la daka, oaf la oaf. The Rambam surprisingly paskins, that's a machloikis in the Gemara between Rav and Shmuel. However, and the Rambam surprisingly paskins that it's gasa la gasa, daka la daka. So then we would think by oaf, it's oaf la oaf, right? Which is a much smaller thing, right? By oaf, he says it's daka la oaf. Why daka la oaf? Daka means behemoth daka, you know, like, you know, not cattle, but sheep, something like that. So why is it, you know, daka la daka? Why should it be daka la oaf? It should be, if it's one universal standard, it's gasa for everything, that's the standard that's called shia. If it's relative, then the shita of oaf is certainly much less than the shita of what? Of daka. I mean, much, not only much less, much different. It should certainly have its own relative standard, right? So what I was thinking was this. Anybody want to suggest an answer to the Rambam? You understand the question? Oh, because maybe the Rambam thought that this, like the Ramban, that the source of Shechita is where is from the Mikdash. So you could have Gas Lagas and Daka Ladaka, but by Oaf, there couldn't be. There was never formulated a halacha of Shechita in Mikdash, because there is no Shechita in the Mikdash. The Mikdash there was Malika. So therefore they had to borrow the standard from a behemoth. So the one that's closest to it is Daka. So that's why the Rambam took Daka La'of. We would get the impression, by the way, from the Rambam in Hilchos Shechita, that the Rambam thinks that Shechita, that the standard of Shechita is Mikdash, because the Rambam says when the Rambam speaks about the halacha of rov, I mean, you know, there's a halacha that how much do you have to shecht? So by gasa you have to shecht rov of two simonim, right? Of the kana the veshet. By an oaf, but not by God, by behemi you have to shecht, you know, rov of both simonim. By an oaf, one or the other is sufficient, right? Chatchili we shecht both, but you can shecht either the kana or the what? Or the veshet. The Ramban in Chulin has a suffix whether that halacha that halacha that lechatchili should shecht kulo is that a din d'oraisa, is that a din d'rabbanan? The Rambam seems to say clearly, you know, the Rambam says when he speaks about the shechita ma'ula, the halacha I just quoted in the Rambam about oaf is in Perek Gimel, halacha Gimel. Ha'isa behema daka shiyas shiyasa k'tei shiyagbiya behema daka v'yabitzena v'yishchot v'im ha'isa gasa k'tei shiyagbiyena v'yabitzena v'yishchot v'oaf k'tei shiyagbiya behema daka v'yabitzena v'yishchot. It's difficult. Why doesn't he say like Tosis Mefush, it should be by oaf, it's oaf la'oaf. But the Rambam says that the shiya shechita is the hashechita ma'ula, the Rambam says, is kulo. And so when the Rambam says it, it sounds, you know, this is the shechita that we're talking about, midiraisa, So it could be because the Rambam derived this halacha that you should shecht kulo, that's in Mikdash, because especially in Mikdash that you want to get the dam. So there, but there, there's a kiyum. So if it's not just shechit being a matter, it's a kiyum, so therefore the shear is kulo. Okay. Just two other things about shear. One that you should be aware of, you know, there's a machlokes rishonim where the shear, if you, let's say I shechted rov and then I was shoah with what we call shear b'mit basus in the second half, is that, does that passel? So most Rishonim hold that it doesn't. Shitas Rashi is that it passes even b'mir basa, and we're machmir for Shitas Rashi according to the Rama. Why does shia passel b'mir basa? After all, I already finished the shechita. All you require is rov. So you see from Rashi that if he thinks that shia passel b'mir basa, that he thinks that shahiyah is it's not just that there's a chson tzivah, that there's no rov, because that there's no kulo. I read a shechted rov, right? You see two things. You see that the loch of rov is not that rov is sufficient. It's a loch of rubu kakulo. So if I shechted rov, it's ke'ein that I shecht, it's ke'ilo I shechted kulo. But if I shecht kulo, then I shechted kulo. And therefore, if I was shoya in the middle of that, even in the Mi'at Basra, Rashi says that passes. That's as relates to Shia. One of the other psulim of Shechita is Drasa. Drasa means that you didn't shecht with a moving cutting action, but with a chopping action. So you can't guillotine the animal. That's called drasa. Now, I want to tell you just a little bit about this, how I earn my living. You've probably read that there are a lot of issues now about shechita, especially in Europe. There's been an attempt in many European countries, and in last year in New Zealand, also to forbid kosher slaughter. A lot of this is anti-Islamic in its origin, but we Jews get caught up in it also in Europe, because they're trying to forbid halal, which is the Islamic ritual slaughter. But shechita, which is different in many respects than halal, shechita is actually a, probably, not having interviewed the animals, but I'd say is probably less painful than some of the systems that the animal rights or animal, what would you call them, the PETAs and so on, and what? Animal welfare, I guess, organizations and governments want to impose, namely that all slaughtered animals should be stunned before the slaughter, which is a very important issue right now in Europe. Just yesterday, the chief veterinarian of Great Britain, and the current chief veterinarian or the former one, suggested that no slaughter should be permitted in Great Britain unless the animal is pre-stunned. The animal can be stunned in two ways, either electrically or they shoot a bullet or a rod into the brain. Now that, unless you hit the sweet spot, the animal, you can see the animal grimacing and so on. So it's not necessarily less painful. When shechita is done properly, within a matter of seconds, less than a minute, the animal is insensate. Because what happens is when you shecht, you also, at the same time, are cutting the arteries that are aligned to the trachea, the carotid arteries, which cause an immediate, almost immediate, loss of blood to the brain, and the animal is not feeling pain anymore. As a matter of fact, the Ramban and Chumash says that the Baruch on Shrita mentioned, he says it's related to the to this concept that there's no tzar in shechita, and that's what we praise Hashem for. This battle is not a recent battle against shechita. You know that Hitler's first anti-Semitic laws began with forbidding shechita, the beginning of the Nuremberg laws. And so we always have to be on our guard about it. You know, recently Holland also wanted to forbid shechita. There's a animal welfare, animal rights party in the lower house of the Dutch parliament, which it passed in the lower house, but the upper house, the Senate in Holland, recognizing its religious implications in terms of religious rights and religious freedoms, didn't permit it to pass. But there are countries that meant, you know, a lot of Scandinavian countries and in Switzerland where shechita is already not permitted. And just recently the Besden of Paris spoke to me that Paris is the largest Jewish community in Europe, and France is the largest Jewish community in Europe, about 600,000 or more Jews living in France. They're having difficulty in terms of finding places to slaughter, because, you know, one of the things they want to do in Europe, which would also obviate shechita, is that you would have to put a stamp on the hindquarters to say that this was kosher slaughtered. Now, that would, you know, it's sort of like a yellow star. You have to recognize that most of the meat in shechita is not going into the kosher market, because we don't use the hindquarters, generally the minig, because we don't do nika on the hindquarters, because the chelev and the gidan osher. And so that right away eliminates half the animal. Beyond that, less than half of the animal is usually considered glatt. So by the time you finish, you're only getting about 25% of the animal or less that's usable for kosher use. The rest of it has to be sold into the general market. If you make it, you know, financially impossible to sell it, because there's been a disincentive, you know, you put this yellow star, this as if this animal has been killed in pain, then you won't be able to sell the meat. So that's why that is a concern for us. This issue is not new. In the United States, in the late 50s and the 1960s, the United States passed the Humane Slaughter Act. It passed, I think, initially in 1958, then it was changed again there have been several amendments to it. But there is one of the amendments to the Humane Slaughter Act is that kosher slaughter, first of all, is exempt from the provisions of the Act, and secondly, and this was done based on scientific study by the Congress, that shechita is considered humane. At the time, Rav Soloveitchik, the Rav Zatzal, was very involved in terms of formulating, not so much just formulating the legislation, but creating a universal Jewish response to attempts to disallow shechita, to limit shechita. And I think it was under the aegis of the JWB, the Jewish Welfare Board, that the Rav became the spokesman. He testified many times before Congress. And as a matter of fact, he was the issue, you know, his involvement went up to the Supreme Court. He was paid, you know, just for his expenses. You know, did that disqualify his testimony or not? But what the Rav did was the Jewish community invested and created a pen. That pen is what holds the animal. So that's in an upright slaughter, which is what we have generally in the United States. The animal goes into a pen, and there's like a hydraulic lift that goes underneath its belly and picks it up, so it can't move on its feet at the time. And then there's a lift that goes under its chin and picks up the head, and then immobilizes the animal. The advantage to this, first of all, is as opposed to the shechita that existed before, which was shackle and hoist, they would shackle the animal and lift it up. So aside from the fact that it was inhumane, it was also dangerous, and there were actually some shochetim that were killed because if the animal got loose, you could give the shochet a kick or move and either injure him or kill him, and there were shochetim that were killed. So the Rav was the proponent, together with Rav Lezer Silver, of this kind of shechita. And you see the Rav's enormous foresight, because, you know, for 50 years the issue afterwards was silent. And he was so smart, the Rav. You know what he did? When after they created this pen and all this Jewish money went in and investment, and, you know, to create the technology to do it, you know what he did? He gave it over to the Humane Society. And you know what they call this pen? The ASPCA pen. How's that for marketing? So, you know, that's the pen that the OU generally recommends. But there are those who want that the shechita should be what they call a shechita munachas. That's the position of the Rabbanut in Israel. The Rav thought that that was a mistake. It's actually a misreading of the Shach. They thought, you know, given that this, you know, the concern was a concern of drasha. If the animal is standing, and you, and you know, when you shecht it, it's, you know, its muscles can't hold up the neck anymore, so the head will collapse on the knife, and it won't be through cutting. It'll be just the weight of the head coming crashing down on the knife. But you know, the way this pen is constructed, that doesn't happen, because it holds up the head with this with the brace that goes under the chin. I remember when Rav Shapiro, Sechet Zalch Vraka, was the chief rabbi, so he was a proponent of this Shechita Munachas, that they are now in Eretz Yisrael. I spoke to Rav Amar about it, which puts Israel, frankly, in real risk, because most of Israel's meat comes from South America. And there they don't have pens. What they do is they just do it the old-fashioned way. It's wrestled on the ground, and you know, and then they shecht it once on its back. So you have the Shechita Munachas. I mean, the I guess the workers there in South America are pretty expert. This happens pretty quickly, but it's not the way we want shechita to be done. And shechita is often criticized, you know, with pictures Peter gets of these different abattoirs in South America. Now, there is an easier way to do this. If they would accept the ASPCA pen or some kind of version of it, which is a relatively inexpensive, pen, we could do everything as Shechita Munachas. And the Shechita, not Shechita Munachas, a standing Shechita. The disadvantage of the Shechita Munachas also is in terms of, if you use it in a machine, it's very inefficient, because you have to rotate the animal first on its back. After you slaughter, you have to re-rotate it to get it back and then take it out. So, you know, I've been a proponent of, naturally, of the Rav's position. I always tell the story. A few years ago, I met with the Sama Rebbe in Monroe. I'm pretty friendly with him. I'm Teitelbaum. And he wanted to insist, which he did at the end, that the shechita for his community should be, you know, the animal on its back. So I told him, Rabban, I think you're making a very big mistake. First of all, you're going to put your, you know, you're just putting, you know, there's no conscious advantage to it. It's a misreading of the Shach. And you know, these people are going to get into your kishkas, you know, the pita people, because there are some of them. There's a whole range, you know, from those who are very very extreme to those who are much more moderate. So I told him that I thought it was a mistake, but then I told him what the Rav told me to write to Rav Shapiro, which I did. He said, "Tell him." He asked me, "Vi haben ze geschocht in der Zeit von Moshe Rabbeinu?" He said, "How did they shecht in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu?" So he said, "Ich weiß nicht, aber das weiß ich. Ich weiß, was Rabbeinu Moshe sagt wegen dem." I said, "I don't know what they do, but I know what Rabbeinu Moshe says about the Rambam." So he said, "Velcher Rambam?" So I told him that Rav Salvechik would quote this Rambam. The Rambam says in Hilchos Shechita that you can shecht the animal ben omedes ben rovetzes. So you see, it can be omedes also. So he says, tells his Gabi, "Bring me the Rambam." So they bring the Rambam. He looks up, you know, I see the Rambam. Taka Zoi Shteitin Rambam. So I thought, you know, I won the battle. Echt the Gatog. So, you know, this doesn't only have to do with kashrus, it has to do with politics also and a lot of other considerations. But I'm reminded of a story. There was once a debate in the Senate. And one senator gave a very, very impassioned speech. And his colleague said, "You know, that's the first time I ever heard a speech on the Senate floor that actually changed my mind about an issue. I have yet, however, to hear the speech that will change my vote." So anyhow, so now he instituted for his community in Texas a vow to repent. But he happens to be a very fine Talmid Chacham. But he's wrong about this issue, but he's a very fine Talmid Chacham. But the interesting thing is now, because they realize the pressure, and they, you know, they want to sell to slaughterhouses, and so the guru of animal welfare is a woman called Temple Grandin, who is a very remarkable woman. She's a professor of animal husbandry in Colorado, and you know, she's autistic. You might have, there was she's written several best-selling books, the New York Times several best-selling books. They want her to, you know, tell them how to do this, which you know I've used it myself many times. You know, let's do it with your standards so that it's done in the best fashion, you know, with that Shechita Menachos as possible. So that's the issue. You'll probably hear a lot about the Shechita Menachos and so on. A lot revolves, no pun intended, on this issue in terms of people's perception of Shechita around the world. Yeah.
Yaron said he could check a medes, and he did not have the contraption of holding the chin up.
Right. So he probably had somebody hold. He didn't have a pen, but he had
humans. That means for sure there's no concern of a dresser, because that head is so heavy. You can have someone holding it from today till tomorrow. There's still
somebody. Right. But, you know, I don't know that the Rambam was necessarily speaking about a gasa. Maybe he was speaking about a daka. But he says in general, you know, there were ways. How did they chef in the old days? They had ropes and so on. They didn't just, you know, run after the animal while it was grazing. They somehow took care of that problem.
But I'm saying it could be even more. Is it possible that a certain margin of natural error, so to speak, that is not considered drosa? You know, now we have the technology to avoid.
No, it's not a vaday drasa. I don't mean to say it's a vaday drasa, but it's but it's potentially a drasa. Okay. Yeah.
With the shchita, the standing shchita, I would say the gravitational pull of the knife, especially.
What do you call a standing shchita?
The standing.
Oh, standing. Yeah.
There's obviously the gravitational pull of the knife. Are you not worried that Shochtim are going to compensate that gravitational pull by pushing upwards?
Well, again, the way we shecht now...
Especially with a big knife.
Right, but it is a big knife. But when we're shechting, I told you, it's in a pen. The head can't move.
But it's not about the head. The knife itself is heavy. The knife right now is heavy. So that, when you're holding like this to go and shecht, it's going to, in some way, gravitationally drop down. Are you not worried that they're going to overcompensate pushing up?
No, the answer is we're not worried. That's not the case. I mean, we can theorize about it, but it's not that heavy, the knife. You know, it's just a back and forth action. So, okay. Now, another halacha in Hilchos Shechita is that the shochet has to be a bazvicha, and which means what's excluded here is that the shochet can't be an oved kochavim or a mumma, and the shochet has to be a human, right? That's the last halach that Rambam quotes in the end of Sim Beis, it's a Tosefta, shchitas kov psula, which is that if a monkey shechts, right? So that shchitas is pasul. Why is it pasul? So it's possible because he's not a bazricha. Also, what's excluded from that is a mumma because a muma who chal Shabbos and so on, he's not considered a vazricha, because he said to us a chalta v'zavachta, zavachta v'achalta. So has to mean that he's a barachila, that he only eats kosher. If he's a muma, he's eating treif anyhow, he's eating avelis anyhow. So therefore, he's not considered a vazricha. Whether muma is a psul diraisa, psul drabonin, is a machloikis poiskim. We generally assume that it's a psul diraisa. In the 1920s, that was one of the serious problems of shrita in America. There were enormous amounts of problems. You know, the namesake of our yeshiva, Yeshiva Yudhitsko Chonon, Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, when he came, came as the Rav HaKal in the I'm not sure exactly what year, in the 1890s, I guess, or 1880s, but when he came, he tried to revolutionize the Jewish, the Orthodox community here in New York City as the first chief rabbi of New York. His support for him eroded quickly when he wanted to reorganize kashrus in New York, which was completely corrupt and inefficient. And in his attempt to do it in terms of making sure that they, the only Shomer Shabbos, and that the meat was sold in a proper way so we can identify that it was, that it was really from a kosher slaughter, not trefa meat, which was, a very large percentage of the meat that was so-called kosher meat was really trefa meat being sold. Anyhow, in his attempt to do it, he just broke his health. The people, the community split about it, and people made unfounded accusations against him. He himself was a great Talmud Chochem, was a Voloshin Talmud, and broke his health, and he died a broken man. But one of the problems was, also in terms of Shochtim, that many Shochtim were not even Shomer Shabbos. So the shechita was nevela. What's the nature of that? I'm just going to tell you one shtickle Torah which every Jew should know, which was the Chaim's famous shtickle Torah about this machlokes rishonim, why shechitas akum is not good. According to most rishonim, the Rosh and other rishonim, shechitas akum is no good because he's not considered a bazricha. Because he's not Muslim Nevela. The Rambam, however, says a different reason, because the Rambam says that Shchitas Akum is not good, because you have to, the Torah says, he learns it from a Pasuk, V'kovalacha V'achalta Mizivcho, it says by over the Avodah Zorah. And therefore, if a goy shechts, so the shechita is possible. So according to the Rambam, the shechita is possible for goy because it somehow is related to what? The Rambam is Perek Dalf in Cheshchita Loch Yud Aleph. Noch bishe shochet, afa bishe shochet b'fnei Yisrael, b'sakin yofa, v'afilo hayakotten, shchitosu nevela v'loika al chilosu min ha-toyra, shenema v'kovalacho v'yachalte mizivcho. V'yacha shehisa shem yocho mizivcho, atalomen shezivcho osa, v'enu dom li Yisrael shen yodei hil cheshchita. So therefore, the Rambam says that a goy who's an ovid of Avodah Zorah, that the shechit is possible and it has a relationship therefore to Avodah Zorah. A different source, not like the Rosh. And then the Ram has this enigmatic phrase in Halach Yud Beis, V'geder godul godul b'dovah shafil goy she'eno ovid Avodah Zorah shechitosu nevela. So V'geder godul godul, who does that mean, geder godul? So the way we have it, she'eno ovid Avodah Zorah, means it sounds like a goy, right? That if he shechts, it is only us who is not over the voters. Let's say ger toishiv. Then it's only some interpret the Ram to mean that that's only possible with Rabbanu, because he's not over the voters. Some have the Shach talks about this. That some have the gifts in the Ram shafilu kusi shritasu nevela. So kusi's on. So then we understand. So ger the goal, that's a Rabbanu, because kusi they were goyzer and kusim. That even if you hold Gary initially Gary Emes, that they gave them a din of a goy. Reb Chaim said that, just in terms of interpreting the Rambam, that Shechitas Akum is not pshat, that it's not a Maaseh Shechita at all. You know, according to the Rosh, who subsumes that because it's in a Bazvicha, so then it's like Shechitas Akof. That's how Shechitas Akof is also no good. So then it's not a Maaseh Shechita at all. So it's regular Nevela. But Reb Chaim said that Shechitas Akum is not that way. That Shechitas Akum is, it is a Maaseh Shechita, but what? It's a Shechita Psula. But it's not that it's not a Maaseh Shechita at all. V'ho Vaya, Reb Chaim said, he had two Vayas. First of all, the Rambam says that the Rambam says in, I don't have the Rambam in front of me now, but in the Rambam in Tumas, what is it? It's in Ovos or Tumas. I don't have it yet. The Rambam says that if a goy shechts, can you find it on your computer? You can find everything on your computer, right? The Rambam's of it.
Yeah, we'll get it.
Look at the words, you know, look up the word Nevela or whatever. No, Nevela's not enough, you'll have. Shechitas Akum, whatever it is. Anyhow, so I'll just tell you what the Rambam says. The Rambam says that this is a Chiddush Dik Rambam. The Rambam says that if a goy shechts, here the Rambam says that Shechitas Akum is Nevela Medirais in Yoloika, right? But then the Rambam says if a goy shechts, that the Tumah is only a Tumah Drabonah, because it's like Tumah Avodah Zorah. Again, the Rambam has this relationship between Avodah Zorah. And he says that to say that if you, and therefore if he would come into the Mikdash, he wouldn't be, it would only be Tumah Drabonah. He says to say that you'd be Chayiv, you have to bring a Raya on that. Because the Rambam thinks that it's what? That it's Pasul only, the Tumah is only Drabonah, even though the Shechita is Pasul Midiraisa. So why is that? So the Rambam says, then the Rambam himself says, and don't be amazed. Who ever heard of such a thing as a Tumas Nevela, a Nevela Midiraisa, that's not Matamah Tumas Nevela. Valti Tomah, the Rambam says, because there's such a model in the Torah, and what's that model? What does the Rambam cite? Who knows? The Rambam cites Trefa, because a Trefa is not Matamah. So, what's the Rambam talking about? What does Trefa have to do with Nevela? He's saying that if you shech, for Goy shechs, it's a Nevela Midiraisa, that's the Rambam here in Perak Dalet, Halach Yud Aleph, and the Cheshchita. But the Rambam then of Asatumos says that it's not mitamim midiraisa. It's only a tumas avodah zorah, which is only a tumim drabonah, right? And if you go into the mikdash, you're not chayiv, right? And I, you'll ask, where do you ever find such a thing? A nevela, that's trefa. Trefa is trefa. Trefa is not nevela. Trefa is an animal that died, was shechted, but it has one of the yudches trefas, right? So what does it have to do with nevela? So first of all, Chaim said from this you see that this Rambam is l'shitaso. We always assume that trefa, the normal way to interpret trefa is that the shechita is 100%, but it's a separate problem, that it's a trefa, right? So Reb Chaim says, you see from there, no, that the pshat in trefa is that trefa is a chesaron in the heter shechita. Now, the shechita is not marked to this animal completely because something's missing in the chiyus of the animal since it's a trefa, and therefore it's a trefa. So he said, Shechitas Akum, the Rambam apparently thinks is the same. It's not that there was no Maaseh Shechita. It's not like the animal died, right? Or it was shechted not in accordance and in violation of one of the five Hilchos Shechita. There was a Maaseh Shechita done. But it's a psul, because Akum is a poisel. Perek Beis, you want to read the Rambam out loud?
Shechitas Akum Nevela. The time of Masa Vakili Israel Alkaba, Vitaha Sakin Yafesh, Vita Karoi, Echarako Mechakusi, or Gerin Tosha, Shpitasa Nevela. The Karabinai Shabzem in Diversofrim, Sheretumas of Razara, Vitumas Tikrovasa, Vidiran, Kosha Spar. We go with Azar and his Fatua Kusin, Nesha Shpitasa, Vintomar, Balo Yasura, Bahila Dintora, Local Eser Bahila Mitame, Sheret Hatrefa, Asura Vitara, Vituta Hora. Pietro Lachaib.
Right. So the Rambam says you need a raya brura, because the Rambam seems to, you know, he's noita that what? That's not metame d'iraisa. So, first of all, the Ram combined. Where else do we see, by the way, there's a relationship between Trefa and Nevela? Which other famous Rambam? Obviously, not so famous Rambam. Right, the Ram. Then, yeah, very good. The Ram says by Chatzishir Nevela, Chatzishir Trefa, and Mitzdarev, even though they're different Shemos. So, the Ram said, because there's one Oyser. What's the Oyser? That there's a Chsona that had the Shrita. By Nevela, there's no Mashah Shrita at all. And by Trefa, there is a Ma'aseh Shechita, but there's a Chesaron in the Heter Shechita, right? So the Ram says, such when it's just an Avela, which is a Chesaron, a Heter Shechita, Shechita's Akum, so then what? That Shechita is what? That Shechita is Nevela, but it's not Matama. Read the Vayvid on that, Ram. I just want to point, the Vayvid is very enthusiastic about this Ram. What does he say?
Zohi Achas Nisvarosav Ve'in B'chulen
So the Ravid in the most, you know, Torah Mada attitude says that this is one of the Ram's worst svaras. Ain lecha pchusit. Indeed, it's the Ram's worst svara that he ever said. Right. Why? Because he thinks that Shechita's Akum is what? Because of what? He's not a Bazvich, it's nothing. And there's actually, if you read the Ravid carefully, you'll see that the Ravid has a little bit of a polemic there. Read the Ravid again, since we're here at YU. What does the Ravid say? So what do you think the Ravid is saying there? I'll tell you what I think the Ravid is saying. The Ravid is saying what? That's exactly the Ravid is saying. Rambam, the reason you say this, that's not matamatumas, you know, in the very, because you think they're going to count for something. You who studied Aristotle, right? You think that, you know, you write so enthusiastic. So he says that they count for nothing, right? So therefore, that there's a underlying story within the Ravid's objection. By the way, this Ravid, is this the worst svara that the Rambam ever said according to the Ravid? Which other, what? There's another Ravid that doesn't ring a bell? The Ravid says, by Kiddush, the Rambam says you're not allowed to eat before Kiddush in the day, right? The Vayvi says also, this is the worst he ever said. So now we have this dilemma, which is really the worst? Unless the Vayvi thinks that these are equally bad. Right? He used the exact same expression, Rav Chaim said, you see from this that it is a Maisa Shechita, right? And so I remember when the Rav said over this thing for Reb Chaim, I just want to add just the history of it. The Rav said, he said, this is typically Reb Chaim's Torah. And he said, you know what? This was Reb Chaim's Bar Mitzvah Drasha. And he said he wrote it himself. And then the Rav said, you know, and I know that no one helped him. You know how I know? There was no one who could have helped him. So there's another Rambam that goes with this. I think I might have heard this from the Rav, but I once heard this from Reb Gershon Sachs, I think from Briskerov. The Rambam says, let me see if I can find the Rambam. The Rambam says that by by the way, there could be a nafka min. It depends how you read some of these Rambams. What if a yid and a goy shecht, some, you know, holding a knife together, right? Say yachav with a pasav. So I mean, we have to see the loch and shulchan aruch, but maybe related. In other words, if goy is a maaser shechita, just it's a poisel, so then it would a pasav. But if goy is not considered a maaser shechita at all, shechita's akum. So Dalmi Hachi Ligoi, the Yiddish Shechter, and it should be kosher. So there's another Rambam. Rambam says maybe you can find it with your magic there with the technology. The Ram has a halacha like this. The Ram says that if a yid is shechting a behema of a goy, right? And he says, the Ram says like this. If a yid is shechting the behema of the goy, he says the shechit is kosher. Why? Because we go bust the machshava of the zoveach, not the machshava of the bailam of the behema. So even if the goy owns the behema, right, we go by the machshava of the yid, not who's the shoychit, not of the goy, right? And the reverse, let's say it was a goy shechting the behema of a yid, so he says also the shechita is posel because we go by the machshava of the zaveach, not of the bal habehema, right? So and from the Rama would have seen, but if you would have held that you go not basa the zaveach, but what? Basa the kavana, the machshava of the bala, the behema, right? So if the behema belonged to a yid and the guy is the shoychit, the shechita would have been kosher. So the Rama has to tell me, no, that's not that way, right? What do you mean? If the guy is shechita, who cares about what the machshava of the yid is? What do you see? That the Rama is l'shita so, because the Rama thinks shechita is akum, is a maisha shechita, right? It's only a psul because of kavala chov yachaltim izivcho. So you might, if you would have gone by the machshava of the behema or the bala behema, it would have been kosher. Can you find it?
Beis katfin.
Beis
katfin.
Yisrael sheshachad l'nochri. Afapi the ram is beis al chov beis. Afapi shehanochri miskaven l'chom ashi yitzu shchitoso ksheva she'ein choshen. El machshavas has zevach. For lo machshavas bal habehema, the fikach nochri sheshochet liyisol afilo hayakotn shkitosin avela kamoshi yispael. Therefore, shkitas nochri is possible, right? Why? Because we go bust the machshavas as aver. But had it been that we'd gone bust the machshavas, what the bal habehema, right? Shkita would have been kosher. What do you mean shkitas kosher? It's let's say shkitas a kof shechted, right? So the Ram thinks it's not like a kof, right? It's called a mashia shechita. Just it's a shechita b'psul. So we would have, right, had it been, it would have been that the shechita would have been kosher because we would have gone by the machshava of the what? Of the Baal Behema. It's interesting, I just want to point out, you know, the Rambam always says, it's by shechita, afilu hayakotn. What, I mean, even if he's a kotn, who cares if he's a kotn? He's still a goy. Why does the Ram emphasize all the time afilo hayakot? That's the lashon of Rambam, right?
Maybe if it's under the kavala,
right? Because the Ram's lishito. So the Ram thinks it's a psul avodah zara. So a kotn who's not at ovid avodah zara, I would have thought that maybe the shechita should be kosher. Should kamash mulan that it's not kosher, right? Okay. Since we spoke about for a second about shechitas katan, I'll just mention very briefly. The Shach asked a famous question about shechitas katan. Why, if the katan shecht, is it kosher? Why don't you see that the katan, just like a goy, is not a bazricha? Just like we say by tefillin, the katan is not a bakshira, right? Okay. So why isn't he a bazricha? So the shach, the answer the shach seems to answer is that he is a bazavicha. Why is he a bazavicha? Because still he's not, you're not allowed to be meichel him, nevelis b'yadayim. So the zvicha is relevant to him as well. It's interesting because Ega asked later on, it says also that a shum, a sumer who shechts, a blind person who shechts, if what? If a Yisrael is, you know, watching, and we know that he shechted from the shechita is kosher. So Kivega asks, why is the shechita suma good? According to Rabbi Yehuda, and there are those who I think Rabbi Ruchem passes, like the Machlokes Tanoim, Rabbi Yehuda holds that what a suma is potter min hamitzvahs. So the shechita should be possible because he's not a bazvicha. So what would you have answered in Kivega's question? I'll tell you and say what Kivega answers. What would you have answered? What? Right, you would say the same thing like we just asked, the shach asked it by cotton. Why is Kivega asked by insuma? The answer is because it's not, but you still can't be machalim v'yadayim. Kivega doesn't answer. Apparently Kivega thinks that a cotton's ma'isavera is a ma'isavera, and therefore you can't be machalim v'yadayim because he's usli degatlus and l'chiv mitzvahs. But his suma is mufka, and therefore his ma'isavera is not even considered a ma'isavera. That's what you would have thought. Why Rabbi Kivega assumes that to ask the kasha, but Rabbi Kivega gives an answer. It's a famous Rabbi Kivega. Rabbi Kivega says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, that a suma is potter min hamitzvah, it's only potter for mitzvah saseh, but it's chayv in all mitzvahs lo saseh. So he is a basuch, you can't eat the veil. There's another Rabbi Kivega here that's important, who says if you shech balayla, just mentioned parenthetically, the loch is if you shech, you're not supposed to shech balayla unless you set shech keneged havuka. So Kivega says an havuka means two candles that are together. They don't have to be intertwined. So if you're two candles, that's already an havuka, and it's an afkamina for havdol as well. That you don't have to, you know, intertwine the candles. If you just put two candles together, that's good for havdol candle. By the way, just parenthetical, it's Ramban and Chumash, but I said Vayavek Ish by Yaakov Avinu. So the Ramban says Vayavek, one pshat means the etymology of the word Vayavek means from the word Avak, that the, when, you know, when you're resting, the dust, there was a lot of dust marks. The Ramban says no, it comes, means that they were intertwined like an Avuka. So the Ramban would seem not like this with Kivega. Alright. One of the halachas of shechita is that you have to shech with the sakin, right? And it has to be, the sakin has to be tolush. We learned that from Avram Avinu. It says v'yikach es ha'macheles. I was going to tell you Chaim Shtikl Torah, but I don't have enough time to do it about Tol Shav's Chibur. I'm just going to close then with just to tell you a little bit about the story, because it's actually coming up this week. It doesn't have to do with Hishra Shechita, but you know, the story of Sholem Mordechai Rubashkin, who was sentenced to 27 years in jail. The case, because I saw this case up close, and the OU, if, I know if you guys are old enough to remember the case or been following it, but the OU was by no means necessarily an apologist for everything that happened at Agri Processing. But the case as it played out, it was an enormous travesty of justice. That he should get 27 years for this case is absolutely absurd. The judge is one of the worst judges on the federal court, Linda Reed. She has a tendency to give people, you know, even first-time offenders having a, you know, life, you know, almost the equivalent of life sentences, which is what he got. For before the sentencing, she got a letter from six former United States Attorney General, from, you know, up from every heavy political perspective. She got from on the left from Ramsey Clark to Ed Meese, from Nicholas Katzenbach to William Barr, Janet Reno, saying that this is a complete misreading of the federal guidelines. Just in terms of Bashkin himself, you know, they painted him to this terrible kind of person. He's quite the opposite. It's a family of chesed that clearly made mistakes in terms of running this business, but you have to pay for mistakes. But the 27 years is just, if he wasn't Jewish and Hasidic, I don't believe that he would have gotten that sentence. And right now, this next week, there's going to be it's being tested in the Supreme Court. The issue which they lost on in the Eighth Circuit was that apparently before the raid, there were ex parte conversations between this judge and the ICE officials and the U.S. attorney in terms of planning the raid. Several meetings, which is in terms of legal ethics, completely inappropriate. She should have disqualified herself, or at least told the defendant that she had these conversations. So that's the technical point. But 27 years for a person, you know, a lot of this loss was because of the U.S. attorney's efforts, namely that it became impossible to sell this business because, you know, the severity of the sentence is also a function of how much the losses were. So here the claim was that the losses were $30 million to the bank. But had the business been able to be sold or continued, it wouldn't have been anything near the $30 million, but they made it impossible to sell the business. Who's going to buy a business when that there can be no transition in terms of the management? I know people in Israel who are looking at the business. What's their name? Zaglavek wanted to buy it. There are others who wanted to buy it, but they just made it impossible. And in fact, you know, this wasn't the family that was trying to defraud the bank. They were trying to save the business. They leveraged everything they owned and mortgaged everything to put into the business. What they should have done is just declared bankruptcy and walked away and you know, retained their personal assets and so on. But that's not what happened. They tried to save the business. And the charges, state charges of, you know, immigration and using, you know, underage children, they did go to trial and were exonerated. So this is a case that should be important to all of us in terms of the Jewish community. It's going to be argued, and it's not going to be argued for the Supreme Court, it's going to be sent to the Supreme Court. Amongst those who wrote an amicus brief to Seth Waxman, former Solicitor General of the United States during the Clinton administration, and the one who's arguing the case or moving the case, if assuming the Supreme Court listens to it. I mean, it's a slim chance. They only listen to about 2% of the cases that are appealed to them. And this year, as you know, they have a pretty heavy docket. So we'll see what happens. But when you read about this, you should really cringe, because it's just as Americans, we should be very upset that this can happen in America. Something the justice system here is very much weighted in favor of, you know, U.S. attorneys and prosecutors. No one has the resources that they have, so they win like 98% of the cases that they bring. But, you know, that's not saying that we should be super proud about. It means that other people, the defendants, don't have the resources sometimes to protect themselves or defend themselves, so they cop a plea, which Rubashin didn't want to do because they didn't give him much of an option. So when you read about this story, you should know that there's very much another side, and what happened is really an outrage. Okay, are there any questions in general? Yeah.
I was just curious, what was the ethical issue that she was involved with the raid?
Yeah, a judge is not allowed to have conversations with, you know, she's not impartial. If she had conversation, it was part of the planning of this raid. And if she did have those conversations, she should have let the defense attorney know about it. But, you know, that's just in terms of the opportunity to get a retrial. I mean, that this, you know, which was a white-collar crime, should get 27 years, first-time offender, is absurd. Equivalent cases for the same amount of money, almost simultaneously, in other districts, got 1 year.
Thank you.